if I can ever get into this. I have done this before. Imagine if this was your first date. Get into the bottle of champagne.
You're just be like tearing at it.
So today
we're doing sect appeal. Who doesn't love a bubble?
Who doesn't love a bubble? So today, Sekt, German Sekt. So the sparkling wine of Germany, let's say.
Right.
All the sparkling wines of Germany.
All of them in one category.
Yeah, so what is Sekt? What do you think of when you hear the word Sekt?
I think of Henkeltrocken. I think of airplane Sekt. I think of
minibar. When have you had airplane Sekt? Lufthansa or something?
Because I just like always just imagine. I think it's just those tiny bottles with the little screw cap plastic things. I don't know, it's like gas station wine.
It is a gas station wine, a German gas station wine.
Right.
Yeah.
What? That turned into, I don't know what happened.
I was trying to say yes right. In French, but you're like, what?
My God. What? My language skills are failing. For those of us outside of Germany, what is Sekt? Because people aren't really drinking it so much. What is Sekt?
So here, obviously, it's widely spread, and also Sekt anyway represents a number of different things depending on your sort of entry into it. Cheap, like you said, gas station wine, and also really special, high quality, long, well aging wines that are made to last and very, very complex and interesting. But what is Sekt? So a sparkling wine that's very loosely controlled, because as we've said, it varies. And the reason why it varies so much in quality is because it's so loosely controlled. There aren't the wine laws in place like there are in regions such as Champagne, where it's very, very highly controlled,
right,
in terms of what grapes you can use, and the production method is very, very tightly controlled with minimum aging. And
right, which is crazy considering how much regulation goes into regular German wines, that it's a bit fast and loose when it comes to Sekt.
Yeah, it's really surprising. When we look back at the history, the Sekt history, 1826 being the first year when the first Sekt production was established, or the first sparkling wine house in Germany, and very competitive with the Champagne region of France.
Yeah, and we were reading earlier that there was a little bit of back and forth between the French and the Germans in terms of helping each other along.
Germans were learning from Champagne producers and taking it back, but also you look at a lot of the Champagne houses that we even see today,
right.
Mumm, Krug, Bollinger, they're all actually German names.
Right.
It's very much like the British royal family.
Yeah, right.
The Germans are everywhere. Yes.
Franks are on the run.
There was obviously this shared knowledge bit that was crossing borders, because obviously not very far between Champagne and the German wine regions, because most of them are on the western part of the country. So that was one point. And then it was this competition of the classes in a way, or different sparkling wines were associated with different classes. So the higher classes were purchasing Champagne and drinking Champagne, because Champagne was 3 times, 4 times, sometimes 5 times the price of a bottle of Sekt.
Has anything really changed?
Well,
I mean, in
terms of the cheapest Champagne to the cheapest Sekt, you're probably right. Maybe 3 times difference,
right,
maybe 2 times difference now.
And I think that Champagne still does have a classist. People that drink Champagne are, I mean, Champagne is delicious. Let's not dog on Champagne.
No, the brand of Champagne,
right,
and what we associate with it.
It's luxury.
It's luxury.
It's
celebration.
Right. It's all of those things. And I think that we forget sometimes that other sparkling wines can be just as festive, just as delicious, and sometimes more interesting. If you fancy trying something new with your friends, Sekt, also other French sparkling wines, other sparkling wines from other regions. Which brings me to ask about, I guess it has counterparts in other countries, so what would you most compare, like production-wise?
I think Carver's the closest thing, because in terms of this huge disparity between the cheaper end and the higher end,
right,
and how confusing it is for the consumer, for all of us that are drinking it, how hard it is for us to find and separate the good to the cheap stuff if we're not just looking at price. And I mean, price is the main teller of it. But
sure,
you know, if you're buying a bottle of sparkling wine at €6-7, €6-7,
right,
under 10, you know, it's not going to be aged for a long amount of time. Maybe it's from a larger winery, all of these little things that would factor in to be able to obtain that very cheap. But I think Carver's the closest thing, because it still needs a little bit of support in being regulated, or at least communicated of how do we separate from like the lineup of wines that we have today, which I think are 3 of the best German Sekt from 3 very, very good German producers, to Rotkäppchen that you find in every single supermarket, every single späti, that empty bottles over the street every weekend. You know, so how do we separate from that if we don't know?
Right. Yeah, yeah, of course. Because there's not much regulation. There's been some sort of internal regulation, which is the Winzersekt.
Yeah, which we're seeing now at the Christmas markets with even Glühwein.
Right.
Which we'll discover more next week. But we see that you see Glühwein and then you see Winzerglühwein, which is meant to be a little bit of a step up in quality. And it's usually drier as well. They don't add as much sugar to it.
Funny. They're just like, oh, the fancier you get, the drier you like.
Or maybe the wine is better. You don't need to drown it in sugar.
True. But I guess this Winzersekt, this naming of it, is the internal way that winemakers are showing that their wine is better quality than the regular old sect.
I guess the only thing that's different about Zekt to Cava, if we drew that, I drew that comparison between Zekt and Cava. The only thing that is different is Cava always has to be made with the traditional method, the champagne method, whereas Zekt does not. There's also a few different categories for Zekt. So there's just the generic Zekt. Then there's the Deutsche Zekt. We've seen that Zekt BA, which is also known as Qualitätsschönwein, like quality sparkling wine. And each of them sort of get a little bit more restrictive, but still, again, if you're not plugged into those tiny little differences in the names, how are you going to know that?
Exactly.
But the generic Zekt category, that can be for wines that are made in the same way that Prosecco is made, so tank method.
Right.
Huge, big tanks filled with wine that then go under the second fermentation in the tank and then are bottled and probably released with no aging on the lees.
Right away.
And then when we're talking about, let's call them Winzersekt, the high quality Zekt that we have today, I like to call it Zekt. This is my example of what Zekt should be, the good stuff.
You're like, everything else doesn't count.
Yeah, all of that stuff is
Coca-Cola. Yeah,
imposters. Imposter Zekt that we've just talked about. And then this stuff is the good stuff that we're talking about. So the Zekt BA, the Qualitätsschönwein category, is traditional method, so champagne method, which means the second fermentation happens in bottle,
right.
And we leave the dead yeast cells, the lees, in contact with the wine for a period of time to give it these lovely biscuity, nutty, autolytic characters that you get with champagne. And usually these producers would do it for a minimum of 9 months, as we'll see with some of the wines we're trying today. It's a lot longer with some of them.
And then in terms of grape varieties, so I think also it's a bit looser in terms of creating sparkling wines here in Germany.
Yes.
The number one grape we'd find is Riesling.
Of course, which is the queen of all grapes, I think. At least in this country.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think you can make a lot of delicious things with Riesling. And then the rest are the Pinot family. Make them sound like some sort of gangsters. So Pinot Noir, Pinot Gris, and Pinot Blanc. And of course,
the Champagne Gang.
The Chardonnay. My God, I want a t-shirt that says the Champagne Gang on it. Like, I was just looking at
with
pictures
little cartoons of different characters for each of the grape varieties.
Because I was just...
You have to do like a mob and call
like
it the Champagne
the Munch
Gang.
Bunch. Do you remember the Munch Bunch? It was like, wow, all right, off tangent.
Yeah, we're waiting for that shirt now. We'll all be like, where is that? Where is
the Champagne
Gang shirt?
I love it. I love it.
I'm going to draw on with some eyeliner, a little moustache on my face for that.
That's Pinot Meunier.
Yes.
For some reason, I feel like Pinot Meunier would definitely...
Poirot.
Yeah, exactly what I'm imagining, like a Poirot mustache.
I could tell with the way you said it. That tone,
Pinot
Meunier.
But also, to get back on track, basically all the other grapes that grow in Germany can also be made into Sekt.
Yeah.
Including my love, Gewürztraminer.
Yes.
And
it's a shame we didn't find one today. I haven't encountered a Gewürztraminer Sekt, but I'm sure it'll be monumental when I do.
So, and if you're listening, if you know of a delicious Gewürztraminer Sekt, leave us a comment on the Apple comments and we'll track one down.
And we'll talk about it for sure.
I won't stop talking about it, you know it.
Before we go on to the wines that we're about to taste, I think that's the hardest thing with this particular sparkling wine with Zekt is the challenge for the consumer. It's just so confusing to distinguish, you know, what is that stuff that's made in bulk? Because we're talking about these different categories, Zekt, Deutsche Zekt, Winzersekt, you know, Qualitätsschönwein. But look at the three wines that we've got here. When you actually look at the front label, which not many people are turning over the back label, they all just say Zekt on.
Right.
So what is separating this from the front label to Rotkäppchen? Not very much.
Not much. So
other than better packaging.
Right, the packaging's pretty nice on all of these.
Yeah, this is a lot classier than the old red foil.
But I do think that if you have questions, then ask the people at the wine shop. you know, ask what their favorite one is.
And turn over to the back label.
Yeah,
because we'll get to it as we go through the wines, but some of them give you a little bit of extra information on the back.
I think especially with these, because there is no regulation in terms of, you know, normally you look for certain words and that tells you what's going on. So with this, with less regulation, reading the back of the bottle is going to tell you what you need to know. So we are starting, we're already drinking.
Sure.
Right, so we're just going to like neck what we've got in our glasses.
This one.
There might be some burps.
It's not so easy to down sparkling wine, is it?
Not. It's going to...
As long as it's not like the Coca-Cola with Mentos situation. What do you think?
I think, well...
Oh, this is drier, though.
Yeah, it's really dry.
Okay, let's start with that, then.
So we didn't need to neck that, but we're going to go back to...
Nobody knows what was in the first glass, Gwen. We could have recovered from that without them knowing.
It's all right. I don't mind. I'm not tattooing tomorrow.
So the wine that we have...
Is?
is Ukonomira Repulse, Riesling Extra Brut, obviously Zecht, 2013.
13?
Yes.
Yes.
Coming from Fouts.
All right, let's have a sniff.
And this bottle in particular is very helpful if you speak German. Because on the front it says Traditionelle Flaschengärung, which means...
Traditional method. Yeah. I'm going to be burping a lot, so I really apologise.
Don't apologise to them. I'm the one sitting opposite you. And actually really nicely on the back, we have the little EcoCert. So I actually just checked this before, but they are farming organically, if that's interesting for anyone. And it actually says BioZect on the back. So that might be, for some people, a little mark of quality.
The gold
I would say also the fact that it says it's bottle fermentation there means, you know, that they're making traditional methods. So that would also be a point of quality.
I'm actually glad we're...
Different.
Different. Yeah. Very different.
And very nicely, they've put the disgorgement date on the back, or at least the month. So this was disgorged in October 2017 as well. For those who want to geek out and find out when it was taken off the lees, that's very nice. So
4 years?
Yeah. We'll assume from the disgorgement date being October 2017 that it's had at least sort of 3.5 years on the lees, maybe, you know. So that's also why we're getting quite a rich texture, even though it's very dry. On the nose, definitely that Riesling quality.
Yeah, totally.
It's quite limey, actually, on the nose.
Yeah, it's really clean smelling too.
Yeah, it's limey. You're getting those toasty flavours, those yeasty flavours. So you're getting this lovely savouriness and a little bit of earthiness coming through. It smells like roses, lime, cordial on the nose.
Yeah, totally.
Mm.
Oh, we once had to stop a guy. He was like, I'll take one of these. He like took a swig of the roses cordial on the bar and then was like, I'll have a bottle of this.
He realise there was no alcohol in it?
He was like just smashed. We actually had to call the cops on him because he said he was driving.
You had to call the cops on him because he was just so hyperactive from all the shots.
He just chugged, necked half a bottle of roses lime cordial.
There's a madman in the bar. He's shotting alcohol-free drinks.
He's going to like swig some roses lime cordial and then say like, oh, that's what I want. Delicious. Give us some of that.
It's one of those things where you hope he's with people who love him that are around to witness the shotting of roses.
Sadly no.
Oh no.
The lone wolf.
The lone limey wolf.
Oh my goodness. No. This is totally something I would just drink by itself. Happy as a clam.
It's quite bracing, this wine, in terms of the acidity. It's like when you walk out onto the beach and it's in the bitter winter and just like, whoa. But
it's really nice, though. I like it.
Yeah, it's got that really good acidity, super dry.
Yeah,
but actually quite... There's a lot of texture, right, and there's a bit of weight there, which is surprising. When I first tasted this, I expected it, because it was extra brut, because it's got low levels of sugar in. For an extra brut sparkling, it says up to 6 grams per litre. Could be a lot less, and it feels like it's less because it's very, very dry.
But I think that's what's nice about Riesling, is even when there's hardly any sugar left, you still have this feeling of sweetness because of
the flavours. Right.
Yeah. So I think that's what makes it so nice for sparkling wine, that you get this super dry... Delicious.
Yeah, almost exotic.
Yes, exactly.
Now it's been open in the glass, it's warming up a little bit as well. I'm getting more exotic flavours, and you're right. It balances out this very, very high acidity.
I even get like a really grapey grape, like a clean, crisp grape that you get straight out of the fridge and like chomp into it. A little bit, yeah.
Do you keep your grapes in the fridge?
Oh, I love them cold. And
it's funny, some people love their fruit cold. I don't know people do that with their apples as well.
No, not with apples, just with grapes. There's certain fruit that's really nice, super cold.
The only one I put in the fridge is prickly pear.
Not gonna lie,
tell you, it's not
really
so common.
It's like, not gonna lie. We did watch a cooking show yesterday with a prickly pear, but I've never eaten one. So.
Okay. They're lovely.
If anyone
wants to send me
one.
To peel.
Yeah.
If you send me one, could you peel it first?
Yeah.
Because I don't want the little cactus.
In a Tupperware I don't have to send back.
Very, very nice. Very refreshing. You're right. This would be great as an aperitif. Or
totally.
Or with some really, really fresh food as well.
Yeah, top. Yeah.
I would look at this the same way as pairing a dry Riesling that's got a bit of age on it. Right. Like sometimes we get so caught up with, oh, well, it's bubbles. Oh, you can't pair this, but...
It's still a Riesling. It just happens to have bubbles.
Very, very nice choice.
If you want to buy it here in Berlin, you can find it at Planet Wine. I'm ready for the next one. I know, the sound is so good. I think I could fall asleep listening to the sound of this. It's so foamy.
Meditative sound.
Totally. Yeah.
So the next one that we're on, 2013 Riesling Sekt Brut from Peter Jakob Kuhn. For English people, that's Peter Jacob Kuhn. And this is from the Rheingau, actually.
So a different region.
And very interestingly, again, this tip of looking at the back label, you see on the back actually says that it says Deutsche Sekt. So it's letting you know it's not the generic Sekt.
They're not bringing in grapes from other countries.
Exactly.
And it's grown here.
Traditional Flaschengärung, which is, fermentation in the bottle, the champagne method. So another little indication of quality there just on the back label. And there is a lot number. So I'm assuming you could email the estate and just let them know, and they probably tell you when it's disgorged because of that. But our lot number is 614.21, in case anyone wants to research the wine that we're drinking.
And it's crazy because I think the smell is very different. It smells like pear drops.
It's so aromatic.
Oh, yeah, totally. Peach,
again,
pear,
citrus, and this very, almost smoky note in the background that I love.
You could make this into a perfume and probably sell heaps of it.
The first ferment is in stainless steel with native yeast, so there's no added yeast at that point. It's 100% biodynamic. All of the fruit, the vineyards are biodynamic at Peter Jakob Kuhn. Peter Jacob Kuhn.
You're giving him a nickname now.
Peter J, yeah.
What up,
Peter Kuhn.
Peach.
Yeah.
Just having a bit of Peach spark.
I've never met him, so I don't know how old he is, so I don't know how appropriate it is to call him PJ.
PJ. That's what we're calling him from now on.
Yeah. Until we meet him.
You don't really get to choose a nickname. Hey. You get given those.
Yeah.
Really sorry
we're
called him PJ.
I'm so sorry, Herr Kuhn. So 18 months on lees, so that's 18 months aging on those yeast cells. So and the dosage, very interestingly, is from Bieren Auslese. So sweet Riesling wine, assuming from the estate, rather than just adding must unfermented grape juice.
It's funny because the more I smell it right now, it's like smelling when you open a jar of applesauce. That like sweet.
It has. It's got this very almost like coolie, like apple coolie sort of thing. 8 grams of residual sugar, so going into the brut category here, but at the lower end of the brut category. So yeah, biodynamic Deutsche Sekt from PJ Kuhn. Very nice, aromatic, smoky. Totally. A little bit more bubbly than the wine before as well. The mousse is a little bit more aggressive. Wine before was very, very delicate. The beads were moving very slowly.
Yeah. Do you think there's a generalisation on whether sects are more or less foamy than, say, champagnes?
No. I think it's the same. It depends on
the alcohol volume and the viscosity.
Yeah, and also like the age of the champagne how it's, how long it's aged and when it's released and how long it's been on the lees, all of these different things of just like a champagne.
So this would be, I think, delicious with a cheese plate with like different jams on the side.
Speaking my language.
Like charcuterie, this would be really delicious with that.
No one talks about this enough with cheese. And I think sparkling wine with cheese is absolutely incredible. Like when everybody says to me, what is your cheese and wine pairing? I always say champagne.
Yeah.
Today I'm not saying that, but I think you're right. Do you know what, like a Pont l'Evêque, like a washed rind cheese or Taleggio, even something with a little bit of stink.
Yeah. I also just think if there's a cleansing thing to drinking sparkling wine while you're eating cheese, the cheese is already so
mouthful. Well, it's fat. You're eating fat and you want acid to cut through, clean your palate.
Because you want to get another cheese in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think with the...
Get another cheese in there.
Hashtag get another cheese in there.
Drink Sekt, get another cheese in there.
That's the Sekt appeal. But I think...
Oh, that's all sorts of wrong. There's so many ways to take that, Gwen.
Oh, dear. I also think maybe there used to be a dessert at Lodenstein that I think this would work with. So that's
Lodenstein is a restaurant in Berlin that does really great four-course set menus that are seasonally driven and really well executed.
And they had a dessert that was like a really not very sweet, mostly it was like yogurt, sort of not too sweet meringue, and then pear, like poached pear. This would, I think, be fine with that. Their desserts tend to be quite high in acid.
Savory
desserts. I think that would actually be quite nice with something, same thing, where it's the sort of cheese course of the end.
Everybody underestimates going back to sparkling at the end of the meal as well.
It also, like, keeps your night going.
Or wakes you back up.
Yeah, exactly. You're not like, you've had a bunch of...
Yeah, you're not in a red wine coma at the end.
Yeah, or something super sweet, like a dessert wine. Not everyone likes to go to the crazy sweet dessert wine. So I think going back to sparkling, and then you're ready to go out after dinner.
So, what are we on to next, Gwen?
Oh, God, my turn to pronounce some stuff. It's our Pinot Meunier.
Poirot is out. Friedrich Becker.
And we have the Reserve Pinot Meunier.
Who did it? Was it Freddie Becker? Was he in the spare room?
It was Freddie Becker in the spare room. Laundry suffocated.
So we have Zecht Reserve Pinot Meunier 2007
from Back in the Faults, is it?
Back in the Faults.
Back in the Faults. Lovely.
But is there anything interesting on the back label of this one?
Well, it's saying also Deutsche Sekt BA, so we also already know that it's up in
the quality.
Right? And then it's saying a bunch of stuff in German that I'm not sure, but it has Pinot Meunier in big letters, so we know that that's the grape. And then it's also done in the traditional Flaschen Gäringsunge method. Hergestellt. Probably totally destroyed that.
No, perfect.
There's a lot of other information. Oh, here we go. I think it's on the lease for 108 months, do you think?
9 years.
9 years.
Okay, so 108 months on the lease.
Yeah,
which
I think that's
means
what it says, right? Yeah. Auf seiner feinen Hefe. On its own fine lease.
Yes.
That's Benene.
And disgorged in 2000... Benene. It's disgorged in June 2017. So they actually write that on the back, which is really nice. So here we've got Deutsche Sekt written on the back. We've got the traditional method also written on the back. I think it's also saying hand disgorged there, but we'll have to double check that.
I think we're back to Chinese food for me in this one.
Yeah. Oh, mate. I'm just out hungry. On other cuisines.
No, have a sniff.
No, I'm only joking. So, obviously, different grape variety and a lot older as well.
Right.
So we're trying something 11 years of age. Obviously, when you try this, the fruit spectrum is so different.
I don't know how many wines I've drank that are 100% Pinot Meunier.
I haven't drank too many myself that are 100%. It's very rare. So, I think definitely, one, we're seeing the age of the wine and we're seeing the lees aging. It's very dominant on the nose. We're getting a lot of these yeasty, autolytic, earthier characters also coming through. It's very savoury on the nose. But you are still seeing some of the Pinot Meunier. You're seeing these red fruits that are sort of dancing around in the background. But for me, the lees aging is very dominant. And it, compared to the other two, which are really showing this lovely fruit, floral, very expressive... still of their youthful elements. Here we're seeing a wine that's developing, you know, we're seeing something maybe...
There's a little tiny sort of medicine cabinet-ish going on.
Here they're farming sustainably, but not certified.
It's funny how...
I love the Friedrich Becker wines. They're really, really good.
It's so funny how the initial... I think maybe there was just too much of everything else going on in my glass.
Mm. Here on the palate, the shape is so much different.
Totally.
It's rounder.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot rounder.
It's totally not what I first imagined from the first smell.
Also a lot more honeyed. I think as well, you know, when you smell it, you smell a lot more of these yeasty characters. And on the palate, you get that as well, but you get more of these lovely honeyed, creamy, sort of fruit coolie thing going on.
It also definitely has a much longer finish than the others. I think it really sticks around.
This is one of my favourite Zecks. We do this by the glass at the Mickleborough, actually.
It's really nice. There's a little bitter note also at the end, like a raw almond or something.
You know what? If you were thinking about Chinese food, little duck oyster sauce pancakes.
Fuck yeah!
This is the wine for that.
Totally. That's definitely something I love.
Get your little half duck. What do they call that dish? Is it hoisin duck or do they call it Peking duck? Peking duck with pancakes.
Oh, in Amsterdam on the boat.
I think also when we're pairing sparkling wines, back on what I said before, of when we're trying these sparkling wines at 100% Riesling, think about it a little bit like how you would pair a Riesling.
Yeah.
Also with the wines that are made from red grapes, they still have the structure there.
Of the red grape.
Not in the same way, because obviously we don't have the tannins. But, you know, so many times, like I pair Blanc de Noir, a white from red.
Like a sharp cheddar.
Or meat. This actually would work really well with certain meat dishes. This also with terrine or
parfait. I was thinking like rich light meats, like not necessarily pork, but something. Yeah, pork would work.
Quail, poussin.
Yeah, the sort of like in between meats that aren't quite white, aren't quite red.
What was your favorite out of the three wines?
I mean, I think they're all pretty different, actually. But I think if I were to, I don't know. I think this is a really hard pick because I really like this. This particular one we're drinking right now, I think, is pretty, a little more complex. Maybe it gives me a little more pause for thought.
Mm.
I definitely think the first one, I could easily just smash that bottle with friends sitting at the table with no food.
Smashable zect.
Totally. And I think the other one would also fit into my brunch bubble category, where I think it would also work. Afternoon wine.
Mm.
So I think it's a sect for every occasion.
Well, we all like different types of zect.
Yeah, don't we? But I don't
different
know.
Types of zect for different moods.
But
and
don't
different
you agree?
Days.
I think I'd be hard pressed to pick an actual favourite because I think each of them shines in a different way.
Yeah, I mean, I'll stop making jokes. PJ Coon, as we've called him, Peter.
I
feel guilty. As
I know, you're like,
I'm too English.
Sorry, Mr. Coon.
I know, the English thing, the English emotional response takes over after a while. Anyway, so that would be my intro to high quality zect for everybody, because I think it would appeal to a broader audience.
Absolutely.
It represents quality. It's very interesting to try a wine that's also young and developing
and
at the same time.
It's delicious and it smells good, and I think
right
it's
right level
like,
of sugar to engage
yes,
people.
Yes, exactly. I agree.
I think O'Connemirat. There you are. Do it. O'Connemirat Red Pulse Riesling. Can hear how natural that rolls off the tongue.
I mean,
that actually would be my sommelier wine for someone who wants to sort of tune in and try something. Maybe it's not that it's more challenging, but it's a little bit more unusual for some people's palates because it's so dry. That would be for them. And also, like, if I was out and let's say we were having a big meal and just something to really freshen things up at the beginning, something with oysters, something like that. And then to finish,
that's
like
the Ponderer,
the Friedrich Becker. Yeah. Pinot Meunier 07. There's something very pleasing and satisfying and very interesting about trying a developed sparkling wine.
I also think there's something like the more you drink it, the more you're curious about it.
Yeah.
It's like the dark, handsome man at the bar that's like not dancing and maybe standing by himself. You want to know a little bit more about
it. Yeah.
And really, he just can't dance. That's the truth. Cool.
Well, I think this wine might be able to.
I mean, it's lovely.
Yeah, I'd like to tango with him. That's all for today. Hopefully that's given everybody an insight into zect. Any feedback, any tips, any zect tips?
If you find us on Instagram, you can find us at juice.podcast.
And if you want to find us online at our own website, that's juice.show, with some tote bags on there and also a list of all of the episodes, a little bit of extra information about us, and our email address in case you wanted to contact us directly. We're also on Twitter as well, so those who are on there, we're on there as Juice Wine Podcast, so just seek us out. Cheers, Gwen.
Cheers!
Cheers to Zect Appeal.
Zect Appeal.